It's September 9th, 2016. Happy Teddy Bear Day. Happy Reader Schnitzel Day. And happy Wonderful Weirdos Day. And I guess it's Happy Strike Authorization Day right here in Pennsylvania. Yes, could be. This is Kevin Mahoney. I'm the editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Rick, welcome to Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop podcast. Each week, we check in with our Capitol correspondent, Sean Kitchen, on the good, the bad, and the ugly that is Harrisburg, PA. We've got a little bit of a short show here today, folks. Lots and lots going on, but we wanted to make sure we got in the mix today and kind of put out our podcast. Today in Trump Defiles, we had a waste of time Commander-in-Chief Forum this week, and debit card paychecks in Pennsylvania back in the mix, and ABSCUF, the faculty union representing the faculty at the 14 state universities in Pennsylvania, concludes 3 days of a strike authorization vote. Oh, man, all that and so much more. You can keep progressive activist media going strong by becoming a member for as little as $2 a month. Our 2016 membership drive is all about preparing for the next 5 years of pull no punches, progressive media in PA. Simply go to RagingChickenPress.org and click Become a Member under the Support and Membership tab. Or if you're listening on Podbean, just click Become a Patron and you'll be on your way. Be sure to check out all the thank you gifts we have for each membership level while you're there. Help us out, folks, and let's make sure that we keep progressive media going strong here in Pennsylvania. Yes, ladies and gentlemen. All right. So, Sean Kitchen, welcome back on this hot, hot day in Pennsylvania.
Yep. You thought the heat was over, but it's still here.
Holy cow. I'm telling you, I've been back and forth across campus here at Kutztown University multiple times today. We're concluding our strike authorization vote today and teaching and all this kind of stuff. And, whoo, man, it's hot out there. So yeah. let me ask you. So did you see? Did you think that this Commander in Chief forum was the biggest waste of time as I thought it was?
I mean, I watched a little bit. I was really watching the Young Turks live feed of it. So just listening to the commentary as it was going on. I mean, it sounded like Clinton was really good at giving her responses. You know, she's really good at, you know, going back and forth with journalists. But one of the things I thought that was really interesting was the lack of back and forth that happened with Donald Trump that happened with Hillary Clinton, with Matt Lauer. I mean, it sounds like Donald Trump was able to say some blatant lies without being fact-checked. But, I mean, that's been happening this whole entire election cycle, so I guess we shouldn't be surprised.
No, and look, my take on it was this, and I know that Matt Lauer got a, you know, people were hating on him pretty hard for not going after Trump in that way. But, you know, I kind of, like I said to you before we got on the air today, is like, you know, this is kind of what we get. I mean, Matt Lauer, we got to remember, he's not the guy who decided, hey, let's do this event and I'm going to set it up in this way. No, this is what we get when we have an election cycle that's absolutely batshit crazy. That you have Democrats and Republicans agree for a format like this. They like the idea that it's going to be on this battleship, the Intrepid. They like the idea of the Commander-in-Chief Forum. But frankly, you know, for the voting public, what we need right now is we need kind of hard-nosed political journalists that are going to be really raking these folks over the coals. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the next president of the United States. And, you know, for anybody who had hopes that Matt Lauer was going to be that guy, I mean, I don't, you know, you're hoping up the wrong tree, so to speak.
I get you with that. And I guess it's a new phenomenon, these town halls, you know, this with this election cycle. I don't remember this many town hall debates or forums. I guess, yeah, they're called forums when Obama and Romney were going at it. It just seems like this is a new thing, like a new little thing that they want to do. And we really get no substance out of it. You know, a town hall is when I go to a town hall with my local legislator and I'm able there to participate as a citizen and ask them questions. You know, TV crews aren't going to be there. Media is really not going to be there. Some media might be there. But when I go to a town hall, it's mainly with me raising my concerns to my state legislator or my the senator or Republican that represents me. This is not meant to be for presidential forums. Like, you know what I mean?
No, I would have no problem with an actual presidential town hall. But these things, we got to remember that these things are highly scripted events, right? They're controlled by the candidates. The whole purpose behind this kind of town hall that we saw.
These questions are screened.
The questions are screened. And the whole purpose of this kind of stuff is to give a feel-good introduction to the candidates. And frankly, I just don't think we can afford this. But this really is the state of our politics right now. And I have to say, I actually feel a little bit for Matt Lauer on this. It's like, you know, people were saying, well, he was really hard on Hillary. He was asking the questions back and forth. But the fact that, you know, because you know with Hillary at least that she's actually has an argument and she's going to respond in some coherent fashion. With Trump, it's just you can't trust anything that comes out of the guy's mouth, right? And he's going to say things that are just going to make another media circus. And, you know, it's kind of like asking questions, you know, into the fog, so to speak. You know, it's like you ask a question and so you're not really going to get a real answer.
It's going to be great. It's going to be huge. I tell you, huge.
Yeah, and Putin.
That's the one thing that like really surprised me. There's two things from that forum that really surprised me. The love of Vladimir Putin coming out of Donald Trump and how conservatives are just eating this up hand over fist. And then the issue of rape in the military and sexual assaults. And he's pretty much, well, it's a numbers thing. What do you expect when you have that many guys and that not that many women? Like, are you kidding me?
No, exactly. And I think that was, if you talk about the biggest, the most scandalous thing about that whole thing, I think that was it, right? I think that was it. But again, this is not substantive discussion, right? This has to do with kind of like taking more shots at this guy's character. We already know this guy's he's a scumbag. He's a sexist. He's a racist. Or at least, at the very least, want to be generous, at least that's what he's running on, right? But, you know, that's these got to be people got to hold this guy's feet to the fire.
One of the things I would say, one of the positive things that came out of this was that he gave no policy points, right? I mean, that's there for the ripe, you know, for now for the media saying, hey, this guy was quizzed on policy for a half an hour, gave absolutely zero policy points on there, just said, oh, well, look at my website. You know, no, nothing substantive. And so on top of going after his character, you can now start going after him because he has no knowing of the issues at all or no substantive policy to move forward with.
No, but the drawback of that for everybody, for all of us, right, is because of that, now Hillary Clinton's position becomes the policy, the default policy to begin with, right? So what do we have now as kind of the one key new kind of policy initiative that's come out as part of kind of international relations? Assassination. Right. But we're going to go assassinate the leader of ISIS. Right. That's where we're going to go. We'll do just what we did with Osama bin Laden to the leader of ISIS. Right. So assassination is where we start in international affairs now because Trump has nothing. Right. So, these are dangerous games that we're playing these days. And I'm telling you, the more I kind of get into this stuff, the more I look at, you know, the direction that things are going and the lack of any kind of serious journalistic pressure on both candidates is disturbing to me. So. But whatever. I mean, what do we expect? Here we are. Here we are, 2016, and these are the state of our politics.
Yep.
Crazy. So let me ask you this. So we have, you know, I know I'm kind of blowing through some stuff here, but, you know, one of the things that you brought to my attention is that we've talked about this debit card scheme on this program before. You've written about this in the pages of Raging Chicken Press. And it just kind of disappeared for a while. But from what you're telling me, this is back on the agenda.
Yes. So I haven't been able to be in the Capitol at all pretty much for the past few months because of how much work we've been doing and how busy we've been at Pizza Boy. Mm-hmm. But yesterday I was able to catch up with a couple of journalists. You know, Roxbury was one of them. We're sitting down talking coffee for a few hours outside at Little Amps. And, you know, a couple people are walking by and we're talking about what's going to be happening next week, what's coming up. And one of the things coming up is going to be the payroll debit card legislation that I covered back in the fall. Pretty much no one really talked about it. I would like to think that my reporting on it actually made the policy a little bit better, because no one talked about it, and what we wrote about and what we uncovered, the loopholes in there, got addressed with an amendment. But the House is planning on taking this bill up next week, the House Labor and Industry Committee. It's not going to be voted upon in the committee, but it's going to be an hour and a half, two-hour information session where both sides of the debate are going to be giving testimony on the bill. One thing I've learned through conversations was that this bill is being pushed by the banks. Mm-hmm. And that a couple people, high up staffers within the Democratic Senate caucus, actually went rogue on this issue, and they went against their senators, their Democratic senators' position, which was a yes vote, and they've been favoring against this bill. So there's a split within the caucus among this, between the Senate staffers and within the their actual the people they work for. And this is the reason why this bill was able to pass the Senate, was because of voter ignorance among legislators.
Remind us a bit about why we should be paying attention to this.
Okay, so this bill was introduced pretty much on a Monday, was introduced on a Friday, referred to committee on Monday, voted out of the committee on Monday, and passed the Senate floor on a Wednesday, all within 6 or 7 days. Mm-hmm. This stuff never gets ramrodded through the Senate. This stuff really never gets ramrodded through the legislature like this. Probably they were banking on people getting caught up in the whole entire liquor privatization debate and other budget issues that were going on at the time to not be paying attention to this. So really only a couple of outlets talked about it. We were probably like the only one that actually talked about it. The reporting that I did for this was actually a bunch of the issues that I brought up were actually introduced into the Senate floor, and I actually amended it into the bill. It's still a bad bill. People are still against it. And this Wednesday, it's going to be in the Labor and Industry Committee, which is a little odd. There's a handful of labor-friendly Republicans inside that committee where they could possibly kill this bill, and it would not make it out of the House this session.
Interesting. So this might be, at least for now, this might be something that gets shelved until they can come back with more numbers, maybe after the election or something.
Or after they come back once the new session starts in January.
In January. Well, man, I know that's, we'll have to just keep an eye on it. So anything that you're going to be following on this over the next couple of weeks?
Well, I plan on going to the hearing on Wednesday. I have an off day, so I could actually go to it. One of the things that this hearing that I've heard is that it's the banks, lobbyists, the banks that are pushing for this. Right. Supposedly when people who are opposed to this bill try to get into an information hearing with people from the Senate leadership would not allow the banks and those opposed and for the bill to be in the same room to try to work something out.
Mm-hmm. So are the banks expected to show up there, or at least their lobbyists to show up to advocate for the
It's going to be interesting. I know the AFL-CIO is going to be there. A couple of other organizations against the bill are going to be there. It would be really interesting to see if the banks are there. I've already been digging around the research to see which banks might be pushing for this and which lobbyists they are using for this through disclosure forms.
Wow. Well, man, we'll see what comes out of it. You know, I think that it'd be interesting to see who's going to show up, all right, in the pro camp there. So, you know, we hear the banks, we're going to see which lobbyists, which organizations are going to show up and advocate for this bill. And then, you know, kind of, you know, do the work that you always do is kind of, you know, follow the money and track, like, who are these people and who's funding them to see who's trying to steal away our democracy. So pretty crazy. Anything else happened up on the Hill that's piqued your interest?
No, not really. The House comes back next week, and the Senate comes back the last week of them of September. So it's still pretty quiet up here. Nothing really going on. Nothing too interesting happening. You know, it's just dead this time of year.
Yeah. Well, and everyone paying attention to what's happening with with the elections and so on. So pretty crazy. Well, you know, so on my end of things here, it's been busy too as well, as folks we've talked about before. I'm the mobilization chair for our local chapter of ABSCUF. Today we're concluding the third day of our strike authorization vote. If you recall that we're, 437 days without a contract now, and we're kind of moving the ball forward. So we had really good turnout here at Kutztown University, and we're hearing the same thing at our sister institutions from across the state. So sometime next week, we're going to find out whether or not ABSCUF members have authorized the leadership to call a strike. If it's a yes vote for the authorization, it doesn't mean we immediately go on strike, but certainly preparations are in order. It's going to be interesting what happens. Right now, Ken Mash, the state president of ABSCUF, is going to be actually on Kutztown University's campus today and as part of a general membership meeting. And later on this month, 2 weeks actually from now. I'll be out in Harrisburg as part of our kind of strike workshop and our legislative assembly. So things are moving rapidly towards, you know, what could just well be the first ever strike by faculty members in the Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education. So we're going to keep an eye on this.
Now, do you think that's something that the chancellor would want to be known as, the first chancellor in patchy history, or the 50, 60 year history of APSCoF to actually force a strike within the state system of higher education?
I really don't think he cares about that, about that question at all. I mean, there's been real questions all along as who's actually calling the shots behind the state system's negotiations. And, you know, my money is on Frank Brogan and his whoever's in his immediate leadership team. You know, you see what's happened, you know, since the Tea Party elections in 2010 and the kind of Koch brother funded agendas that we've seen across the country, you know, provoking strikes, you know, and is just for them, it's just a kind of like another tool to try to destroy unions. You know, they don't really see it in terms of like, you know, their personal, I don't know, legacy or something like that. Unless they actually, what they get out of it is, you know, worse conditions for workers, worse conditions for unions, and a kind of consolidation of power into the bureaucrats and highly paid administrators. I mean, that's what you know, Brogan has been about in his education policy from his time in Florida, right here in Pennsylvania. So, you know, I think what he sees this as is he's playing tough guy with the unions. Because he wants to destroy the unions and he wants to worsen our conditions of employment. I mean, I think really that's what it comes down to.
One of the things that's really interesting about this is that Governor Wolf has been pretty quiet about this.
Yes.
So it makes you wonder if what his thoughts are on this.
Yeah, well, I know.
The fact that none of the reporters following this have asked the governor's office to give a statement on this.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I know that there have been meetings between ABSCoF's leadership and Governor Wolf. The substance of those meetings, we don't know what it is. the governor has been informed about concerns and so on. Now, he did swap out some of the Board of Governors members who have been making some decisions over the state system. So there's a new chair. Guido Piccini is no longer the chair of the Board of Governors. And there seems to be a positive turn there, but frankly, those are really small drops in the bucket when you're talking about 437 days without a contract. So, you know, who knows where the governor is at this point and what kind of political game that he's playing. You know, I mean, this is, you know, frankly, I don't think that ABSCoF or the state system of higher education is at the top of this priority list. And I don't say that as to disparage him or anything like that. I just think it's just a fact. Especially given what you have kind of the entrenched interest of the PAGOP to block anything that Wolf wants to move forward. So I think he's kind of staying out of this fight at this point. So it's interesting to see if he's, you know, if we're going to see him as a strike date approaches, if we're going to actually see him enter this mix.
So. Yep.
So crazy. Well, hey, let's take a little break and we'll come back with a couple little fun things. I know Sean is doing laundry, so he's got to attend to that business. And I've got to go actually help build a float for ABSCoF has a float in the Kutztown University Founders Day tomorrow. And the float is actually going to be a Raging Chicken. So that's going to be pretty good. All right, we're going to take a little bit of a break. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be right back with Sean Kitchen after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1919. That was the day that the Boston police went out on strike. The police in Boston had not had a raise for over 6 years. They worked long shifts, sometimes even more than 80 hours a week. The police force was predominantly Irish. Many had served as U.S. soldiers in World War I. Fed up with their working conditions, the police formed a union and joined the American Federation. Federation of Labor. Boston's police commissioner, Edwin U. Curtis, refused to recognize the police union and fired 19 police officers for their organizing efforts. In response, the new union voted overwhelmingly to support a walkout. More than 1,100 police officers voted to strike, with only two voting no. Across the country, newspapers made dire predictions about the collapse of law and order in Boston. While there was an upsurge in crime due to the lack of police on the streets, the press wildly exaggerated what was happening in the city. Newspapers ran stories about gangs running wild with rioters and communists attacking women, fueling Red Scare fears. The entire labor movement came under attack. Massachusetts Governor Calvin Coolidge declared, quote, "There is no right to strike against public safety by anyone, anywhere, anytime." This hard line against the striking police helped propel him to the national stage and eventually to the Oval Office. The striking policemen were fired and replaced with unemployed World War I veterans. In response to the national outcry over the strike, the American Federation of Labor revoked the charter for other police unions. The Boston police strike is the subject of the page-turner The Given Day by author Dennis Lehane. A fictionalized account of the events surrounding the strike, the novel follows the experiences of one Irish policeman during this tumultuous time.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop podcast. Each week we take a look at the good, the bad, and the ugly that is Harrisburg, PA. So Sean, as we kind of do this little short podcast for today, can't leave without kind of talk a little about some craft beer stuff. So you got anything on the craft beer agenda?
No, not really. Just been taking a little bit of a break from the craft beer.
Wait, what?
I know.
You're like craft beer king, man. What do you mean? What's going on? You all right?
I'm okay. I found a new substitute. You know, I've been cutting back on the beer, cutting back on some of the more unhealthier things from Pizza Boy, like the pizza on a daily basis. Cutting back on the junk a little bit. So I cutting beer out a little bit. And then, I've just been substituting it with some whiskey.
So I was waiting here, water or, whatever. No, whiskey. Okay. Any whiskey or?
I bought a bottle of Knob Creek rye whiskey the other day.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's one of my
favorite. My God. I had some of that at the bar on Tuesday night when I got off my shift. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is what I'm getting. it's just a really, I've started to drink some bourbons over the past few months. Mm-hmm. And then I've had Knob rye once or twice, but really after a few months of having bourbon and developing somewhat of a taste for the bourbons, having that Knob rye was just like that spiciness and that, like that's the spiciness from the flavoring is really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's good stuff. I mean, I think I mentioned this to you as well. Is like one of the things that I bought for a friend of mine, and I have a bottle myself of that. It's Jameson's has come out with, it's called, I'm going to forget the name of it. It's called, Caskmates. That's it. Caskmates. So they kind of did a twist on what craft beer has been doing. So, craft beer does the kind of the bourbon barrel age stuff or whiskey aged beer. Well, they kind of flipped that script and they basically took, Jameson's and they aged it in craft beer barrels. It's actually really cool. It's a real smooth, interesting taste. So that's, kind of in the whiskey mix.
Yeah. One of the things that, it's actually pretty interesting because we have a premium store right near me on the mm-hmm. other side of the river in the West Shore. Mm-hmm. And they have a really nice large collection of things, of other bottles you normally wouldn't see around. A bunch of Pennsylvania-based whiskeys are there. But also one of the things I've come across, Bullet Rye or Bullet Bourbon. Have you heard of that?
Yep.
Really, it's one of the things I talk to some of my friends about, getting involved with different whiskeys and ryes. And they say you should just go buy Bullet. Supposedly it's 95% rye. Mm-hmm. Which is like really, that's a really high mash bill for any rye whiskey. Most of the stuff's like 51 or 55% rye grain. That and the Michters are going to be both around 90, 95% rye. So it'll be a lot spicier. So I'm looking forward to just trying different things,
Yeah. Well, there you go.
On my little break and journey through the whiskey
Yeah, well, it's, you know, I was thinking, you know, whiskey is a nice way of welcoming the fall and the coming winter too, as well. So all yeah. we could say is winter is coming, sir. So I get to actually take a short trip down to the shore this weekend, which I'm totally psyched about. We're going to celebrate. That's it's my wife's birthday weekend and stuff. And I know that down on the Jersey Shore, there's a brewery called 7 Mile Brewery. And, you know, hopefully I'll be able to stop by and check that out, maybe bring back some new stuff, talk about that next week. So otherwise, I'm just going to take a little bit of a break. It's been pretty like a whirlwind over the past month or so with all this strike prep and kind of trying to get our platforms moved over with Raging Chicken and so on. So it's been quite some time.
And so it's going to be nice and it's going to be nice and cool this weekend. And, you know, after Saturday, it's going to drop down a little bit, you know. Well, I'm looking forward to next week with this very cool weather coming in. It seems like this might be the last push of summer.
I hope so, man. I tell you, it's like, I don't mind it too bad, but this is just getting to be too much. You know, it's actually supposed to be actually cooler down the shore than it is here. It's supposed to be about 81 or so. So that's going to be nice.
Yeah. I went outside this morning, go get my laundry done. And I went to the Broad Street Market, which is our really excellent farmer's market here in Harrisburg. Yep. It's two separate buildings. It takes up a whole entire city block. Look, they're old fashioned, like railroad buildings, like an old fashioned terminal almost. And they have a really good, like, I go there at least twice a week now. They're open Thursday, Friday, Saturdays just to get lunch or breakfast, you know, breakfast meats and stuff like that. Or if I wanted to cooking in the morning. And man, I looked at my phone. It was already real feel of 90 degrees with the dew points in the upper 70s. And I'm like, Jesus, God, I can't wait for this weather to be over with.
Yeah, yeah. I'm done. I'm done with this stuff. Yeah. Well, hey, man, listen, I know you got to get going. I know you got to get back to that laundry, doing all the household chores today. I'm glad we were able to kind of carve out a little time and kind of a really what's otherwise been a pretty freaking crazy week. So next week, hopefully things even out, and we'll be back with our kind of full and updated Out to Coop podcast. Anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
Nope, that's everything.
All right, man. So I'll talk to you next week.
All right, I'll talk to you later. Have a good one.
All right, will do. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We're signing off. We'll talk to you next week. See ya.